What's up, everybody? Before we launch into today's episode, we have a very exciting announcement. We here at the Command Zone are hiring.
That's right. If you've ever dreamed of turning your love of Magic the Gathering and Commander into a career, if you want to work with creative professionals in a fast-paced environment that's really rewarding, if you're creative, ambitious, hardworking, passionate, we want you on our team. And one thing, Jimmy, is that's really cool, I think, is we have a lot of positions open, and it's all the way from people who are entry level with no experience to people with that are experts in their field that have a lot of experience. We want people all along that spectrum. I think this is a really cool place to work. Hopefully you would agree.
Yeah, I think so. It's been one of the best parts of my life for the last 7 years. And if you're looking for a way to get into showbiz, the entertainment industry, online content creation, there is no better place. We very much look forward to seeing everyone's applications.
Yeah. So that link is collected.company/jobs. The link will be in the show notes, so you don't have to memorize it or anything. Mm-hmm. But please, if you're interested, if you want to join our team, follow that link, apply for one of the positions or multiple positions, and hopefully we're talking to you very soon. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everyone. All right. Let's get on with the episode.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
What is up, everybody? You're watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jimmy Wong.
And I'm another one, DJ. We are here today to talk to you about more cars.
DJ, I feel like we were just here like a week ago.
We were.
Set reviews upon set reviews. It is the year of set reviews. There are so many cars in As the Commander podcast. We have to cover every single one of them that is relevant to the format. So today is pretty exciting because this is the first time Wizards of the Coast has really combined forces with another world, another IP. It's Dungeons & Dragons time. Roar.
A whole set revolving around it, and the flavor is intense in this entire set.
Pretty good. I'm pretty excited. I'm a casual D&D player, so I just recognize some names, but I think the way that these cards look, really excited for all of it. But before we get into it, you might want to pick up some of these Dungeons & Dragons cards. You might want to build a sweet new dungeon-themed deck. If you do so, head on over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's our affiliate link. They'll have all the cards you need, including the sealed product for AFR and everything else. Just type in that affiliate link. It's as easy as that, and blammo, you're on the page, you're buying your cards, and you're ready to go. And while you're there or at your local game store, support Ultra Pro, our other sponsor for the show. We sleeve everything up in Ultra Pro product. We always have Ultra Pro product when we are playing game nights as well. I have these mouse pads at home that are all Ultra Pro. So
Not play mats, mouse pads.
They're mouse pads. They're play pads.
If you're not using your play mat as a mouse pad too, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And the final way to support the show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. We shout out one lucky patron every single week. So this week's episode is dedicated to Jonathan Steinman. Jonathan. You rock.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay. Whew. So there's a lot of stuff to get through today. I'm really excited, though, because if you're a D&D fan, you're probably going to know way more inside stuff about this than we are, which is totally okay. I'm here to talk about the power level of these cards.
Exactly. We're here to see how they play in Commander. But if you do notice something interesting about the lore, the flavor, let us know down in the comments. Jimmy and I aren't experts, but we love reading the comments and finding out more about these cool cards.
Yeah.
Speaking of cool cards, our very first one is sort of a brand new mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
It's an enchantment class. Let's take a look at Barbarian class.
Roar.
Barbarian class is one red mana for an enchantment class, and so you pay one mana and you immediately get this first effect. If you would roll one or more dice, instead roll that many plus one and ignore the lowest roll. Okay, so that's level one that you get for one red mana. On level two, you could pay one and a red at sorcery speed to be able to move to level two. You still keep level one. Okay. At level two, whenever you roll one or more dice, target creature you control gets +2/+0 and gains menace until end of turn. Okay. There's a whole nother level. So again, you pay two and a red to get to level three, and creatures you control have haste.
Okay. All right. Wow. There's a lot going on here. First off, completely brand new. This might remind you of a saga. And sagas typically move from one stage to the next.
Or like level up mechanic kind of.
Right,
you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
A mix between the two.
Yeah. And it's pretty cool. I love the templating on this. At its base, this is a red enchantment that gives you that first ability. And then it's up to you whether or not you want to pay the extra mana to get to the last one. So by level three, you're actually spending one in a red, two in a red. That's five mana plus one for the enchantment. So it's six mana to get to a level three enchantment that says creatures you control have haste.
Okay, but I don't think that that is good, but let's move through the certain levels. Yep. Because here's the thing. You want this if you are rolling dice. If yes. you are rolling dice, then you want this card.
In
and
fact,
that's it.
I think you really want this card.
I know, yeah. You really want this card.
And there are a lot of cards in this set, as well as through Magic's history, that do involve rolling dice. This is just like Krark's thumb, but instead of coin flips, this is for dice. So don't sleep on this card. If you get a foil out of this out of a pack, this could be worth something someday, I think.
I know. Okay, so I agree. If you are rolling dice, you want this card. Do you want it if you're not rolling dice?
No.
No.
Because there are a lot, and I'm talking a lot, of haste enablers in red that don't require you to pay two installments of two mana and three mana.
I know,
to get
most
there.
Of them are just three. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Right.
And there's a lot of them. You can choose whichever ones you want. And so this is just good for dice rolling. And if you are rolling dice, then that's great. Now, once you want it for a single red for rolling dice, everything else is just gravy.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Free. It's on there. If you have nothing else to do, sure, give your creatures a pump, give them haste. So yep. Barbarian class is fantastic in those types of deck.
Yeah, I think like as far as haste enablers go, my personal favorite is Hammer of Purphoros. It's a great little artifact.
It's one of my favorites too.
It's great. And yeah. It gives you extra utility. It's free, right? So Barbarian class, again, great if you're rolling dice. And if you are, awesome. There's also a new commander called Vrandis that definitely is a dice rolling deck. And I think Barbarian class goes very well in that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next up we have Flame Skull. This is a very interesting card. It's one red for a 3/1 creature skeleton with flying. Obviously, it's a flying flame, if you've seen the art. Flame Skull can't block. It's okay, though, because it's a 3/1. And it has a new keyword called Rejuvenation. By the way, there are like 50 new keywords in this set. Pay no mind to the actual keyword
name. They're like flavor keywords,
yeah,
right?
They're flavor keywords from Dungeons & Dragons. Just pay attention to the text here. So, Flame Skull says, when Flame Skull dies, exile it. If you do, exile the top card of your library. Until the end of your next turn, you may play one of those cards. And if you cast Flame Skull this way, then you can't play the other card and vice versa. So let's go through this. I play a 3/1, it swings, someone blocks it, it dies. When that happens, I exile it, and then I also exile the top card of my library. If that's a land, until the end of my next turn, I can either choose, okay, do I want to play that land, or do I want to play Flame Skull again, bring it back to the battlefield, and maybe look at the next card in my library if it dies again.
Yeah, this is really interesting because on its face, you could get a 3/1 flyer can't block that draws you a card when it dies.
Mm-hmm.
And if the card you draw isn't that great, then you can just rebuy it, play the 3/1 flyer again. It is a really interesting design and pretty fun, I think. I think that it's going to see a lot more play in formats where a 3-powered flyer is more relevant and that recursion is more relevant. But I'm pretty sure that there's some red decks out there that are going to want this kind of effect.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I do like the fact that if you have a sack outlet, it's just a 3-mana sack it. You can sort of dig one card deeper. And the best part is it says you can play it. So if you're just looking to get a land, Flame Skull can come in early, be a little bit of damage. Maybe it dies somehow. I think ideally you're sacrificing it to something, and then that way you can look at the top card. And hey, if you really don't like it, or if it's like a 9-mana spell you can't play, just play Flame Skull again. So interesting card. I think you're right, though. Certain decks are going to want this way more than others, so don't get too excited. It is creature type skeleton, and there's a lot more of those recently as well.
We're going to be talking about some creature type skeletons a little bit later. Okay, speaking of relevant creature types, we have Hobgoblin Bandit Lord. One red for a 2/3 creature goblin rogue. Other goblins you control get +1/+1.
I like it already.
Red and tap, Hobgoblin Bandit Lord deals damage equal to the number of goblins that enter the battlefield under your control this turn to any target.
Any target? That's great. I'm so used to seeing target creature or planeswalker, but this is a goblin lord, and that's great. It +1s all your goblins. And then it also has this incidental, like, could do a lot of damage. It could do anywhere from 1 to, like, 50 damage, depending on what deck you're playing.
I know, right? I've seen Krenko decks that you tap it, and it just produces, like, 15-20 different goblins, and then suddenly this is a way to sort of weaponize that goblin creation.
Yep.
But here's the thing, you don't need to produce 15 or 20 to goblins. If you just play 2 or 3 in a turn, tap this to take out your relevant creature, or just get damage through immediately, it ends up being really, really good.
Yeah. This is a slam dunk in Krenko decks, obviously, but like you said, DJ, if you're just playing like Krenko's Tin Street Kingpin or Siege Gang Commander, these all come in with a lot. Muxus Goblin Grandee is another deck that this just goes in automatically. And then even like Hordling Outburst is just a 3-mana spell that makes 3 red.
It just turns it into a lightning bolt, just free lightning bolt. There you go.
To any target. Yeah. So I think this is a card that Even if it does one, you're okay with it. If it does five, you're loving it. And if it just sometimes does 20, then you're probably winning the game.
I actually think that this is one of the second or third best Goblin Lords that you can have. I think that Goblin Chieftain giving haste is like one of the best ones out there. But this is second or third. I honestly think that it's really good.
Very good. If it has haste, it's even better because then it can count itself and then just immediately do some of that damage. But yeah, there's tons of Goblin decks that just this automatically goes into. So this is like a slam dunk, I think.
I got one statement. And it is going in there for sure.
Great. Can't wait to lose to that. All right, next up we have a big red burn spell. It's called Meteor Swarm. It's X red, red, red for a sorcery, and Meteor Swarm deals 8 damage divided as you choose among X target creatures and or planeswalkers. So if you pay X is equal to 1, this is 1 red, red, red to deal 8 damage to 1 creature or planeswalker. If you X is equal to 2, then it's going to be 5 mana total for 8 damage to X target creatures or planeswalkers. So the rates on this, I think, are actually pretty decent. 6 mana if you want to split 8 damage amongst 3 things. Unfortunately, it doesn't hit face in its sorcery speed, but I think this has a lot of potential in just those big red damage decks. So we already know that Torbrin, Thane of Redfell is all about that. Obosh, the Prey Piercer, if you pay 5 or 7 mana for this, then you get the odd CMC effect, or mana value effect. And my favorite, Torolf, God of Fury. It sort of tramples the damage. So if you have like a 1-1 on the board, you pay 4 mana for a Meteor Swarm, deal 1 damage to that, 7 mana just goes somewhere else, 7 damage to something else, 1 damage there, and whatever kills it, it just keeps going on and on and on. And so you could actually kill like 3-4 things with a Meteor Swarm.
That seems like the deck. This does seem pretty narrow, like only a few red commanders that deal damage around will want it. But when you find that commander, you know, it ends up being pretty good.
Yeah, similar to the Goblin stuff, you need to be in a damage-dealing deck that wants to cast spells.
Yeah.
Maybe give you a reduction on them. Maybe it could also be in like your Mizzix of Ismagnus type deck.
Oh, yeah, I could see that. Okay, next we have Minion of the Mighty. It's 1 red for a 0/1 kobold with Menace. Pack Tactics. Whenever Minion of the Mighty attacks, if you attacked with creatures with total power 6 or greater this combat, you may put a dragon creature card from your hand onto the battlefield tapped and attacking.
And it stays there. Woo! So you're just cheating the mana cost on a dragon as long as you have 6 or more power with the combat. Now, Minion is a 0/1 with Menace, which is just hilarious.
It's hilarious. Kobold. I mean, of course, it's a kobold. Yes. Of course it's going to be a 0/1.
Feels like Rugrock a little bit. But yeah, so I feel like it's not that hard to get up to that 6 power, especially if you already have another dragon on the battlefield.
One thing, though, is that as soon as you get a dragon onto the battlefield, cheating another one into play doesn't do as much. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think people look at this and it's like 1 mana. It could be swinging on turn 2 or on turn 3, and like I can really cheat stuff into play. This is more going to be for Commander, actually, because it allows you to snowball bigger than your opponents do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like you get a dragon down in the mid game and then suddenly this is attacking with it and then you can snowball into bigger and bigger dragons.
Yeah, you're definitely not turn 1, turn 2-ing, attacking and getting a dragon out.
People have talked about that, though. Like,
yeah, I'm sure there's
plus 3, plus 3, plus 3, plus 3.
Look, you're not playing those cards in your dragon deck. I hope you're not, at least.
I think there's a turn 3 kill with the plus 3, plus 2 onto it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you play this on turn 1, and then you put 2 plus 3 plus 2s onto it. It swings with 6 power, and then you put the double striking dragon, and that's 20 damage on turn 4.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Now, that's obviously a standard playable type thing, or maybe a historic thing. Minion of the Mighty, though, I just think goes into any dragon deck that has big creatures in it. And, you know, again, with four players at the table, there's probably going to be someone you can swing at with the minion where they don't just block it and kill it.
For sure.
Because it has menace. And that's actually really valuable, I think.
I also think that you need to make sure to pay extra attention to your card draw, because this is an enabler. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, doesn't do anything on its own. You know, so this is kind of a, I don't know, like a ritual or some way to cheat your relevant dragon to play. So you need to be able to have the dragon, have this, and then have enough mana or enough cards in hand to be able to cheat more dragons into play.
Yep. But really interesting card. I can't wait to just get thwomped by it someday, I'm sure. Someone's going to swing with that and a couple other things, and all of a sudden, a very scary thing will hit the battlefield.
Udvara Hellkite.
Yep. Speaking of dragons, Orb of Dragonkind is our next card. It's 1 in a red for an artifact. You can pay 1 mana, then tap this artifact to add 2 mana in any combination of colors. Spend this mana only to cast dragon spells or activate abilities of dragons. And then you can pay red and tap this to sacrifice the Orb of Dragonkind to look at the top 7 cards of your library. You may reveal a dragon card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
Oh my gosh. It's a dragon mana rock that fixes you. And when you don't need it anymore, it lets you get more dragons.
Yeah.
I think this is a slam dunk. I think it feels awesome. Mm-hmm. I think that it goes in tons of different dragon decks. I mean, a lot of times in those sort of these tribal kind of ramp spells, I don't like them as much, you know, because it feels like I'm not able to ramp into my other spells, my kill spells or my other ramp or something like that. But this feels like it has enough upside that I want to play with it.
Yeah, and it only costs 1 to tap it, and then you get 2 mana back. So you are gaining a mana. So this counts as like an artifact that it's almost like a signet, right?
Yeah.
But that in this like case, it's just dragons. But the nice thing is it says dragon spells or activate abilities of dragons, and then you sack it to find a dragon card. So if you're in a changeling deck, then this counts all of that. This counts Crib Swap, Blades of Velisvel, anything that says tribal instant changeling. This actually counts as a dragon spell. So it's kind of cool. So if you do have a deck that fits into that very niche category, then the Orb of Dragonkind is for you.
Another thing that I really like about this card is that if you have a dragon deck out there, even if it's a 5-color one, there are really strenuous mana requirements on your mana base.
Right.
Because a lot of the best dragons are red, but then you want to play these other colors too. So you feel like you're base red and then splashing 4 other colors, which can be really stressful, and especially if you don't have a lot of money to make your mana base completely perfect. This fixes it because it's in your main color. Your main color is red, and you can play it and then sort of morph your mana into other things to be able to cast that Ur-Dragon or be able to cast that Ojutai or something like that.
This 100% is like the Tiamat deck right here.
Yeah, for sure.
Because so many dragons in my Temur dragon deck are like 3 red, red, red. And you're like, how am I ever going to cast this? I have to make sure that I have enough red lands, but I also need blue and green. So Orb of Dragonkind seems really good. Not to mention, I think just paying 1 red to sacrifice it, that's a great rate. And 7 cards to find a dragon. You're going to hit a dragon in those decks.
For sure. All right. Next, we have a kind of a PSA, a little bit of a warning. We have Wish. 2 and a red for a sorcery. You may play a card you own from outside the game this turn. No, you can't.
You cannot. Don't think about it.
Not in Commander. You don't have any sideboards. Even though you do own cards outside the game, sorry, you can't.
Yeah, big sorry. Now, of course, there are some playgroups. And they...
Are we one of those playgroups, Jimmy?
No, I don't think so.
I'm like, can I start playing Wish, Jimmy?
I would be playing every Wish in my deck to be like, cool, let me just go search from my entire collection of
binder.
Cards.
He's like, there's a Wish binder.
Yeah, I mean, the reason that these cards are balanced in other formats is because they have 15 card sideboard, so you can only put certain things in there. But yeah, Wish is definitely just not for Commander players. You wish...
We just wanted to give you like a heads up about that because there might be...
Always some confusion.
Yeah, there's always going to be some confusion about that.
Okay, next up is Zorn, X-O-R-N, for 2 and a red. It's a 3/2 creature elemental. If you would create 1 or more treasure tokens, instead create those tokens plus an additional treasure token. Okay, all right. Extra treasure. Oh, there's so much treasure generation. I think Wizards looked at treasures and went, wait a minute, here's a way we can give red ramp and white ramp and blammo. Here we are. Now, there are so many cards now, and there will only increasingly be more cards in the future that create treasures because this is just the perfect little space design-wise to be able to give 2 colors like red and white to give them mana ramp. So Zorn is great. This is an awesome card that if you are a red deck that's mono red, has a lot of treasure generation, this will do work. This will do tons of work. It'll almost feel like you're putting another land onto the battlefield, but really you're just putting 2 treasures.
Absolutely. So just imagine things that just put a single treasure on the battlefield, like Dockside Extortionist. We mention that card all the time, how great it is, but it just generates 1 extra treasure.
Yep.
Who cares? You know what I mean? But what about like Smothering Tithe?
Every time you get 2.
Or like Monologue Tax.
Yep.
Or Goldspan Dragon. Or Captain Lattery Storm. Or Magda, Brazen Outlaw. Prosper Tomebound, the new Rakdos.
Nuts. Revel in Riches. Tireless Provisioner.
Like Green needed that.
Yep. Yeah. Well, look, Green has so many things that I'm just sick and tired of it. But I am happy. There are so many cards here. We wrote a lot more down. Stormkiln Artist. Strike It Rich becomes really good with this. Seize the Spoils. Galazeth Prismari. And then there's also the Academy Manufacturer.
Oh, that's a different level too, because you know, you create other stuff and then it like balloons and gives you food and clues at the same time, or and you generate those treasure. Other ones.
Yeah.
I love that like token matters deck. That's like all those artifacts synergize together. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Like
so Zorin is just a great card, I think. It's elemental, so that will matter for some decks. But the main thing here is that you do want to have, I would say, in your deck at least like 5 to 10 treasure generators or ways to do so if you're going to play Zorin. And
you definitely need a critical mass, right? Like, but
unless you care about elementals and just have the ability to put into a 3-mana 3/2 slot without sort of deteriorating your deck. But yeah, you definitely want to have a lot of different treasure generation.
For sure. All right, next up we have You Find Some Prisoners.
Wow. Another, like title. This card too, man. I love this card.
You Find Some Prisoners. It's 1 and a red for an instant. Choose one. Break their chains. Destroy target artifact.
Very nice.
But classic. Great stuff. You can also choose interrogate them. Exile the top 3 cards of target opponent's library. Choose one of them. Until the end of your next turn, you may play that card, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast it.
Wow. So you wrote this as a reverse anticipate.
In red?
Yeah.
I think it's awesome. I love stealing other people's cards, and that's some card selection right there. Like, you can go in and find exactly what you need, but the baseline of destroy an artifact is just solid.
Yeah, I think this is by far one of the best cards Red's ever gotten printed. Just, like, right? It's, I would put this in the same conversation as, like, the Jessica's Wills types of cards.
Woo!
Now, obviously, Jessica's Will is way, 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 way better, but this is an instant speed card that gives you 2 abilities, and both of them are very relevant. If someone tutors to the top of their library, you just get them. Because in their upkeep, you find some prisoners and you snap that card from them. And then you can play as though in mana of any color you have until the end of your next turn. So you can even play it on your turn because you're going to have a whole turn cycle, including your own next turn to play. Or you can play it on the end step and have all that mana open. I feel like if you're playing a Paco and Haldin deck or a Stolen Strategies type strategy or a Tali Primal Storm, this is just a card that works in all of those very well. But honestly, I would put this in so many decks. This counts as 2 different things. It's card advantage as well as single target removal, and it's at instant speed, and it's only 2 mana. I love this card.
I love it too. I think that it's great.
Yeah, I expect now, I don't know if this is true or not, but I expect to see that card get played quite a bit. I also expect it to do, it's one of those cards that works really well in limited, really well in constructed, and I think also really well in commander.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm all for it. Okay, next up we have a very scary looking planeswalker. It's Zariel, Archduke of Avernus. So scary that her whip is actually on the text. It's like, I'm the Archduck of Avernus. 2 red for a legendary planeswalker, Zariel. It's got 4 loyalty when it enters. +1, creatures you control get +1 and +0 and gain haste until end of turn. Or 0 loyalty for create a 1/1 red devil creature token with, when this creature dies, it deals 1 damage to any target. And the -6, you get an emblem with, at the end of the first combat phase on your turn, untap target creature you control. After this phase, there is an additional combat phase.
All right. So when evaluating planeswalkers, we really want to focus on, you know, the immediate pluses and minuses to sort of find out what's going on, because those ultimates are oftentimes pretty hard to get to.
And there's no guarantee it's going to stay alive by the time it gets back to your turn.
Exactly. The +1 is pretty solid. You know, I activate that ability on my Kenrith all the time to be able to +1/+0 and sort of give haste. Granting haste is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we have more reliable ways to get haste. Sometimes if you want haste, you want haste through the whole game.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You want to play your haste enabler early and then curve out into things that are bigger and bigger. When you're playing Zariel and you tick it up immediately, what else just entered the battlefield that you could grant haste to? Like, not very many things, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So in order for that +1 to really work, you have to make sure that it lasts all the way around the table.
And then you can play a creature.
And then you play something really good with haste. So I don't think that it grants haste reliably enough for those decks that need it to count in that area.
Another way we evaluate planeswalkers is how well can they protect themselves. So do they have a way of reducing a creature on the other side or creating a blocker? And in this case, the 0 ability, it's cool that it costs 0, creates a 1/1 red devil creature token. Technically, this can trade with a 2/2 because it deals 1 in combat, and then when it dies, it deals another damage. But in general, not the best.
It's a 1-mana card that we've seen in other areas. And also, it's a 1-mana card that no one plays in Commander.
Yep. Yep. And if they do, it's incidental because a card makes it. So
yeah.
Zariel is okay, I think. I think you're going to want to find... This is one of those planeswalkers that it's not like Elspeth, Sun's Champion, where it's just a board wipe and makes, or it makes 3/1/1s. It's just good no matter what. It's one of those planeswalkers where you really have to find the synergies, I think, with your commander or with your deck strategy for it to make a good case to be included in your deck.
I agree completely. So if we are here, let's look at the ultimate. It's a -6, so you can plus it up twice and then minus it. Mm-hmm. That is a very powerful ultimate. You know what I mean? Getting extra combat phases. One thing that's really interesting, though, is that it only untaps one creature.
Mm.
It kind of like encourages you to go wide by putting those devils on the battlefield and giving +1/+0
all your creatures,
to all of them.
Right.
But then for the extra combat, it only selects one creature to untap.
So it's a little bit of a non-bow within itself because it, you know, but at the same time, maybe that's how they're trying to balance it.
Yeah.
Typically, though, when you're getting extra combat, you're spending a whole card to do so. So I think if you have Zariel out and you can get her to ultimate, either you doubling season or Vorin collects this in a red-green deck, which likes to beat face with creatures and get extra combat, then maybe that's an interesting case where you're playing this because you're already going wide, and so she'll come down +1, and that's going to be really powerful. Or you know that you're going to have a Vorin collects Monstrous Raider out or a doubling season and you're making tokens or whatever it is, and already and Zariel comes out and just says, cool, immediate, give me two combats.
I'll tell you what, I actually own the exact deck that this goes in.
Oh yeah?
Like, I'm going to play Zariel for sure. I have an Is It Planeswalkers Matter, like a walker strategy, but it also plays Polymorph. So they care about planeswalkers that put creatures onto the battlefield, just awesome. Like this one does. And then also you can polymorph into something big and stupid, and then this gives it haste.
Nice. Okay.
So this is perfect in my very narrow is it Walker's Polymorph deck.
Yep. Great. Well, I'm glad that it fits there. I'm sure someone out there is going to be clamoring for this as well. Let us know, of course, in the comments what deck you think would fit perfectly for Zariel, Archduck of Avernus.
Archduck. I love that, Jimmy. It's so great.
We're going to take a very quick mid-roll break to hear from our sponsors. But when we come back, don't step away or move away or turn off your headphones. Can you turn off headphones? Because we're going to be talking about blue and to see how powerful it is in Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. We'll be right back.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Next, we have the Black Staff of Waterdeep. It is one blue mana for a legendary artifact. You may choose not to untap the Black Staff of Waterdeep during your untap step. Animate Walking Statue. One in a blue, tap, another target non-token artifact you control becomes a 4/4 artifact creature for as long as the Black Staff of Waterdeep remains tapped. Activate only as a sorcery.
Okay, this has a lot of text on it, and I'm unimpressed. Just going to put that out there.
3 mana, make an artifact a 4/4.
Okay. So any artifact, right? It could be a 1/1, but it needs to be a non-token.
So it's not your treasure. Not your treasure, not your Thopter, not your Servo.
Ew, interesting.
But it can be like your artifact lands.
Okay, and then it's an indestructible 4/4, but then you lose a land as well.
Yeah, I don't like that.
It could be like an equipment maybe that you need to just have be a little more useful, but blue is
pretty useful on its own anyways.
Yeah, blue isn't really in that either. So
I don't think that you're playing Ornithopters to be able to make them into 4/4s. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I made a good comparison here to Rise and Shine, which was our preview card.
Yeah, and we went in deep about what we want out of a creature, like transforming an artifact into a creature. And we basically decided that 2 mana to make something a 4/4 is just not good enough. Mm. It has fringe case scenarios, you know, where we might need to threaten a planeswalker or block or make sure Craig doesn't attack us with infect, things like that. But for the most part, we like Rise and Shine's overload. This doesn't have an overload.
And it only does one at a time at sorcery speed, so you can't even get someone with like a surprise 4/4 blocker if they swing at you.
I was thinking about that. I was like, oh, maybe I can turn it in. No. Mm. I don't like, but here's the one thing that I do like.
Okay.
A lot of times when you want this effect, it's on an enchantment. It's on a spell, you know, it's on not an artifact.
I see.
So a lot of times when you might dilute it with different cards that are not the type that you care about. And this is an artifact that cares about other artifacts in an Artifact Matters deck. That is the one thing that I really see going for it.
I don't really see much else going for it, unfortunately. You know, you did write that there could be an interesting combo where you turn like a Mana Rock, like a Gilded Lotus, into a creature, and then you have a card that says untap target creature, and so you can use the Gilded Lotus multiple times. But I feel like you also have a lot of cards that say untap target artifact that you could be doing for the same effect.
It's true, you do.
So, doesn't seem too impressive, but if someone is managing to break it out there, let us know. I would love to be proven wrong in this regard. All right, next up we have some awesome art. It's the Demi Lich. It costs blue. That's right, 4 blue pips for a 4/3 skeleton wizard creature. And it reads, this spell costs blue mana less to cast for each instant and sorcery spell you've cast this turn.
Ooh.
Whenever Demi Lich attacks, exile up to 1 target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard. Copy it. You may cast the copy. And you may cast Demi Lich from your graveyard by exiling 4 instant and or sorcery cards from your graveyard in addition to paying its other costs.
Ooh, this does a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Very prohibitive mana cost, but all you have to do is cast some instants and sorceries.
And it goes way down.
Yeah, it goes way down. It could be free.
Could be free, although 4 instants and sorceries in a turn means that you're probably dropping a lot of like quickens and spells that cost just 1 mana in order to get there.
You're right. You're playing like 4 cards in 4 blue anyways.
This does need to attack to do so, but you do get to rebuy an instant or sorcery card every single time it does attack, which is pretty good. Obviously, there's a lot of instants and sorceries that you'd want to be doing this with the Demi Lich. And it's interesting because you can also cast it from your graveyard, but you have to exile 4 instants and or sorceries from your graveyard. And so you're going to get rid of the cards that you'd probably want with the Demi Lich to be exiling. So I feel like this is just in straight up the Spell Slinger decks, nowhere else.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you're cheating mana cost by being able to play spells and get this out for free, but the spells that it's sort of flashing back are not free. Mm-hmm. So it does kind of feel like it goes along in the same deck that a Snapcaster Mage might go along.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
Another card, Ethereal Forager. Mm-hmm. That's the blue whale that also lets you delve away some instants and sorceries.
Yeah.
And so if you have that style of deck, that heavy blue spell slinger deck that also has creatures to come onto the battlefield to pressure your opponents and give you value over and over again, I mean, Demi Lich sounds like it's pretty, you know, sturdy. You know what I mean? Hard to get rid of. Good value every time.
Yeah. And the main thing is that it doesn't have haste. So every time you cast it, you have to wait. But maybe you're playing red or with like a Riel of the Everwise or Kalamax the Stormsire. And then that way you will have a lot more things that you can be, you know, casting and hopefully getting out the Demi Lich. I would say if you get the Demi Lich out for 2 blue mana, blue, that is like the ideal sweet spot. But it's trying to get past that means you're using a lot of mana just to cast those spells. So that's a lot.
Yeah, I think that the best spell that goes with this is Frantic Search or any other free spell, honestly, because it can sort of get you that mana. Because with just a Frantic Search, you can have a spell, so it reduces it by blue. You have all of your mana available. Mm-hmm. You're pitching things in the graveyard. Demi Lich wants things in the graveyard anyways.
I like that.
And if you are more than one color, you can untap extra blue and just untap that stuff right. in order to like get the blue that you need to get to Demilich levels.
Yeah, because blue, that is a very hard spell to cast unless you're in mono blue.
Yeah, for sure. But I like it.
Yeah, I like it too.
But do you know what I like more?
What, Dragon Turtle?
Dragon Turtle!
Dragon Turtle, we did it! Are we sure we're not in Ikoria? This is one blue for a 3-5 creature, Dragon Turtle. It has Flash and Drag Below. When Dragon Turtle enters the battlefield, tap it and up to one target creature an opponent controls. They don't untap during their controller's next untap step. So this comes in at flash speed and locks down the creature your opponent controls, but it also locks the Dragon Turtle down itself. Maybe the Dragon Turtle, it's like a ship. He's like biting into the ship, and while they're biting into the ship, no one can do anything.
I think this is great, and I love the flavor on it too, that they're both tapped. I think that if it wasn't tapped, then the flash would make it like a really solid 2-for-1 and it'd be really actually quite good.
It's also, yeah, a great blocker. It's a 3-mana 3/5. That's like very much not on rate. In fact, that's nice, especially for a blue creature.
Yeah. Although this Frost Lynx effect, this effect that it just locks it down for a single turn, that's not a real commander-y thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's tempo, but tempo, when you have two other players that you can't impact the tempo of, doesn't work as well.
Yeah. But the nice thing is that it's a turtle. So I wish it synergized better with Archelos. So Archelos says that you can either have permanents enter the battlefield tapped or untapped, but this trigger says when Dragon Turtle enters the battlefield, then you tap it. So Archelos doesn't actually care. The Dragon Turtle still is able to do it. So
Archelos is a turtle too, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. Man. I want all the turtles to work together. But apparently we're getting more turtles, it seems, like with a Dragon Turtle this time around. And there's like been a turtle in every set. So maybe the Turtle Tribal, you know, TMNT type deck is there, and it's going to grow to be a real thing soon.
I love the turtle subtype right there, but dragon is clearly the more relevant one.
Right.
I mean, there are decks out there that play Icefall Regent that does lock something down, you know, kind of permanently. But if people are playing Icefall Regent, they might also want another dragon that's cheap to cast that helps you out with your tempo game.
In this case, it's also a turtle. Love that. Keep your eye out. I feel like we're getting a lot more turtles.
Jimmy's slowly calling his shot. More
calling
turtles.
Calling my shot, yeah. Yeah, and then I'm going to have them all altered to be the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's going to be a whole deck.
Next up, we have Mind Flayer. 3 blue for a 3/3 horror. It has Dominate Monster. When Mind Flayer enters the battlefield, gain control of target creature for as long as you control Mind Flayer.
All right. Shed your thoughts and let my will flow through you. Pretty intense.
Yeah. There's not much to say about this because we've seen this on Sower of Temptation.
Mm-hmm.
And Sower of Temptation has been a pretty solid card played in decks that want it for a really long time.
Yep. It also costs 1 less mana and is a flyer, so it has a bit more upside.
Jimmy, stop.
But this is still a creature enters the battlefield and takes over a creature, which means if you have a sack outlet, you can get rid of the thing you steal. But more importantly, you could just flicker this. It's in blue, so you have a lot of ways to do so. Brago is, I think, a great thing, plus a sack outlet. You could be stealing something every turn with this and the sower, so you have redundancy there, maybe.
Baron Master Wizard has you sacrificing things to interact with your opponent. So you can steal something and then sacrifice the thing that you stole.
Yeah, or you can play it with braids.
I have it in braids because I let you put something stupid and big onto the battlefield and then I take it with a Mind Flayer.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then Marchesa of the Black Rose also loves taking things and then keeping them for yourself. The only thing about this is that the creature doesn't gain haste when you steal it. So you got to make sure, I think, you have a sack outlet. Also, if your opponent has a sack outlet, good luck trying to mind flay them.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, next up we have Mordenkainen. I hope I pronounced that right. This is apparently a legendary figure in the D&D world. It's 4 blue for a 5 loyalty planeswalker, and it has 3 abilities. +2, draw 2 cards, then put a card from your hand on the bottom of your library. -2, create a blue dog illusion creature token with. This creature's power and toughness are each equal to twice the number of cards in your hand. And -10, exchange your hand and library, then shuffle. You get an emblem with, you have no maximum hand size. Okay. 6 mana planeswalker. So this is the top end of planeswalkers. I think only like the Garrix and the Karns and Ugins get above this. 6 is sort of like where the big daddies and mommies typically end up.
Sure. And the big dogs.
Big bog. Yeah, big dogs indeed. Because the -2 here makes a really good boy. But let's talk about the +2 first. So you draw 2 cards and you put a card from your hand on the bottom of your library.
This is surprisingly good because we've seen Jace's sort of brainstorm thing be better than drawing a single card, even though you're up a card, because of the filtering that you have. This gives you similar levels of filtering. Drawing 2 and being able to put something irrelevant that you don't need on the bottom is better than just being up 1 card. So that's solid.
Yeah, and not to mention, typically with the brainstorms, those are made better because you draw 3, then you put a card on to the top of your library, and then you want to shuffle it away somehow. So this putting a card on the bottom of your library is good. It means that you don't need to redraw it.
You're always getting 2 deep every single time.
Yeah, that's actually pretty interesting. And let's talk about that -2. Let's say you have 5 cards in your hand. His -2 makes a 10-10.
That's very, like, you have 5 cards in your hand often in blue decks, right? Like, you could regularly have that, and then you have this big 10-10 dog.
Yeah, now
that's protection.
Blockers, yeah, this is definitely protection. And it's a dog, so who's going to swing at it, right? Who would dare approach the foot of Mordenkainen when his good boy's in the way? And I would say the ultimate is obviously a this should win you the game type card.
It's hilarious too, because the dogs then can be huge, even huger.
Oh my gosh, yeah. It could be like 140-140, right?
Yeah,
if you
exactly.
draw 70 cards or whatever.
So if you have that thing. But here's the thing. If you -10 it, like, you should be able to win and draw your deck, so you have counterspell backup as well.
Yeah.
There's just a ton of different ways. So you have, I win the game as an ultimate, but that's not a really unique ultimate for a six mana planeswalker. The plus is a great card draw ability, and -2 creates like pretty chonky boys.
Even if it's like a 4-4 and you only have 2 cards in your hand, that's still better, right? Remember, we were talking about the other planeswalker and it makes a 1-1. So the fact that this could be, this could be anywhere, as long as you don't have 0 cards in your hand, then it dies. As long as you have 1 card in your hand, this starts off as a 2-2 and only gets bigger from there. So I actually like Mordenkainen quite a bit. I think there's a lot of power here. I would be interested to see if there's any synergies out there that we miss in terms of putting cards on the bottom of your library. It's not like we're playing Granzo Dungeon Warden or anything. So I'm sure there's something there, but the fact is you just get you get to draw at least 1 card and you get to filter your hand a little bit as well. This might be one of those things though where you, like, let's say you have a Thassa's Oracle and that needs to be on the bottom of your library, so you can put that down there. So when you draw it at the very end of the game, you'll play it and then immediately win. Maybe that's why. Okay, thanks. All right.
Okay.
Next up,
we have Tasha's Hideous Laughter. 1 blue-blue for a sorcery. Each opponent exiles cards from the top of their library until that player has exiled cards with total mana value 20 or more.
Okay. So this, I'd say, at minimum is going to mill you like 6-7 cards.
Yeah, because if you look at the ability with the mana cost or the mana value of the average commander deck, it's around 3.
You know, right.
So 3 times 7 cards would be 21.
If they hit 7 spells in a row. Now let's say that there is 1 land in between each of those cards. That's 14 cards now.
The average, 3 is the average mana value of a deck, including lands.
Oh, including lands? Okay.
Yeah. So it is the average 21 cards.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good.
Times
3, though, across the table, you get about 20 cards. Now, this does seem nice to me because you are exiling instead of milling.
So that's like a pro and a con.
Yeah.
So you tell me about the pros.
The pro is obviously exiling cards is way better than just randomly dumping your opponent's cards into their graveyard. If there's at least one player that has graveyard synergies, you might be doing a disservice to the entire table because all of a sudden their crazy Carador deck just got powered up to the max because you just helped exile. Their Nethroi, Apex, whatever, just got powered up because of what you did. So exiling stuff is nice. It doesn't give them the chance to ever touch it again from their graveyard.
You are absolutely right. The one downside that I see is that the biggest mill commander out there, Bruvac the Grandiloquent, does not synergize with exiling cards, but does with milling cards.
What if it said each opponent mills cards from the tops of their library and then they exile those cards instead?
That would be better. But it does not.
It does not say that indeed. No.
So this has to be in just dedicated mill decks. Is 7 cards enough?
I think you'd want to hit at least 10. But the fact that you're doing it to every single player, this might just be another addition into that deck, into the Persistent Petitioners deck, whatever it is. It is nice, again, that you get to exile those cards, and that is a big, big upside, I think, especially as Graveyard Synergies just get more and more.
Okay. Try it out in your mill decks and tell us how it performs.
Let us know.
Next up, we have Pixie Guide. One and a blue for a 1/1 fairy with flying.
And a 1/3, actually.
Oh, sorry. One and a blue for a 1/3 fairy with flying. Grant an advantage. If you would roll one or more dice, instead roll that many dice, plus one, and ignore the lowest roll.
Okay, not bad. So again, this is another card that helps you double up on your rolls, but this time in blue. So...
Great. If we mentioned it for Barbarian class, we're going to mention it in blue too. If you're rolling dice, roll some dice.
Roll some dice. All right, this next card I'm pretty excited about. It's called True Polymorph. 4 blue-blue for an instant. Target artifact or creature becomes a copy of another target artifact or creature. So instant speed, you get to change any artifact or creature on the board into another artifact or creature.
So you're excited about this, but to me this feels like a lot of mana, you know?
Six mana is a lot, trust me.
I mean, if I just want to copy something, I feel like I can do that for 2 or 3 or 4 mana. Like, I'll just clone your thing.
Right. I think this is more of a gotcha type thing, where if you're holding up the mana for stuff like Sublime Epiphany in your deck or like big draw spells, then maybe you can find a spot for True Polymorph, because you got potentially you're going to blow someone out in combat. They're going, I'm going to swing at you with my commander. You're like, I'm going to turn it into a 1/1 and turn their blocker into a 3/3. Or their blocker is a 3/3, I'm going to turn yours thing into a 1/1, and it's a copy of something else awful on the battlefield, and it's just going to eat it.
Oh, I can see that. Like, you have a commander, and it's like, oh, your commander is now a signet.
Yeah.
And it's stuck like that. Just it can be a signet from here on out.
Yeah, or you just, right, like, that's great. That's removal on the spot. It can sometimes just blow out a combat, and I think it can also shut down some really problematic stuff, including Eldrazi. You know, someone, if poor Ashlyn had her like a massive Eldrazi turned into a squirrel, she'd probably feel pretty bad about it. Nice thing, especially,
can I turn my squirrel into an Eldrazi? I'd rather do that.
Yeah, I mean, you could go either way, right? But if someone's about to swing and hammer down at you, you do have some recourse. The cool thing about this is that, again, you do have the ability to do this to any artifact or creature, not non-token specifically. That's the sort of stuff I'm always looking out for. But six mana, that's tough.
But do you know what? Now that you're mentioning it, it just feels like it can be very flexible. You know, it's not just a boring removal spell or just a simple copy spell. It really is this tricky spell. And I think that in blue, having instant speed, tricky stuff is so on flavor. It works with the rest of your deck.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, if you're holding up Sublime Epiphany and you need something to do, sometimes like this could be just one more trick in your book.
Yeah, you can't stack these up too much, but I think this might be able to make the case for being an inclusion in that kind of deck. Not to mention, like, let's say you want to copy, like, a Great Henge. This allows you to do that, too.
Oh, I like that. I always like copying Great Henges. Yeah, I want a Great Henge.
It's a great card.
All right, next up, we have Wizard's Spellbook. 5 blue-blue for an artifact. You can tap it and exile target instant or sorcery card from a graveyard. Roll a d20. Activate only as a sorcery. So when you roll that d20, you look at the number value on it, and a 1 to a 9, you get to copy that card, and you may cast the copy, okay? A 10 to a 19, copy that card, you may cast the copy by paying 1 rather than paying its mana cost.
Not bad.
And for a 20, for a crit, you get to copy each card exiled with Wizard's Spellbook. You may cast any number of the copies without paying their mana costs.
Okay, so definitely play this with the Pixie Guide. But even then, the thing that really stands out to me, this is a 7-mana artifact? What? That's so expensive.
And you only have a 50% chance of cheating cost.
Right, you might have to pay full cost for that card if you're just copying it, and that's not going to feel great.
But you mentioned the Pixie Guide. You know, if you had a Pixie Guide, then you're 75% for cheating cost.
Yeah. So I think this card would be way, way better if it wasn't 7 mana.
It's hard to get going, huh?
It's really hard to get going. But presumably by that point in the game, when you're casting 7-mana cards, there's a lot of fuel in your graveyard. And the nice thing is you do get to choose the card when you do it. However, again, activate only as a sorcery.
Ugh. I know, right? That'd be pretty great, too. Like if you just... I don't know, like a counterspell. You're just like, all right, counterspell. Let's roll the dice.
Right.
Here's the thing. It's expensive. It's clunky. But if you ever roll the 20, just like it's amazing. So that might be worth it enough. I'm sure that there are a ton of people that are going to slot this in decks because they want to put a ton of things underneath it.
Exactly.
They want to roll that 20 and they want to just have this commander moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This big moment. And so that's where I think it's going to see a bit of play.
They could also just play Mizzix's Mastery. Okay.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, okay. If it's a blue red spellslinger's deck, maybe you need both. But again, seven mana, it's.
But no,
very
you don't want to. I would not want to exile things from my graveyard if I have even another card out there that could access them.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
like if Mizzix's Mastery is in my deck, I'm not exiling things with this staff.
Ah.
You know, I'm just waiting for Mizzix's Mastery to actually hit them all.
Okay. All right, let's talk about our last blue card on the day. It is Yuan Ti Malison. One in the blue for a creature, Snake Rogue. A 2/1. Yuan Ti Malison can't be blocked as long as it's attacking alone. And whenever Yuan Ti Malison deals combat damage to a player, venture into the dungeon. Now, quick breakdown. If you don't know what the dungeon is, there are three special cards released alongside Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. They all have different rooms in it. Every time you see a card that says venture into the dungeon, it means you go into the first room of any of those three. But if you're already in one, you move to the next room, you decide the path you take, and the abilities on that room trigger when you enter it. The dungeons are not inherently broken. There is a lot of value tied to them, and there are a couple of decks that are very much all about venturing into the dungeon itself. This is a nice creature that can pretty reliably get you through the dungeon as long as it's the only one attacking. But at the same time, maybe there is someone that's open that you can attack with this and other stuff and just deal combat damage.
Yeah, I think this belongs in Dungeon Matters decks because on its own, it might be harder to move through those really good dungeons.
Mm-hmm.
But as part of a comprehensive plan to move through dungeons together, this can move you through a couple rooms because you really need to get to those later rooms to start seeing relevant value.
Yeah, you wrote down Tetsuko Umezawa, and I think that is a great card for a card like this, because it, you know, you already have a bunch of unblockable stuff at that level, and maybe you do want to venture into the dungeon a bit more, because notably, these aren't tied together. It can attack with other people, it just needs to do combat damage to adventure into a dungeon, but you can almost guaranteed make it happen if it's attacking by itself, which is kind of cool.
Which is cool, because if you just want a 2/1, which is not a lot of decks, but there are some decks out there, maybe Snake deck perhaps, or a Rogue mm-hmm. deck perhaps, or that the Umezawa deck that I talked about.
Right.
You know, just having a, hey, scry one, gain one life, you know, on your creature is not bad. So right. Like this could just be fine without any other dungeon pieces in it, but you really need that 2/1 body, and that narrows down the scope of the kinds of decks that want it.
Yep. Definitely check out Sephiris of the Hidden Way if you are looking for more creatures that will help you get through that dungeon a little bit more fast. Okay. That does it for blue. You know, fortunately, and maybe I'm being a little mean, fortunately, there's not much here that makes me go, oh, come on, Wizards.
I agree with you. I don't think happy. That there's, yeah. So you're happy about that, fact that it's like...
Red and white need help. We have so many cards coming out right now. If we just keep stacking blue and green with just the greatest stuff, they're never going to catch up. And we're going to be overwhelmed with so many cards, and I'm not going to want to build in those other colors as well. And I want decks in all of the colors.
I like when they make powerful things for narrow strategies, and yeah. I do think that we've seen that here. You know?
Demi Lich is a great example of that. I think that's right in the right world, and it's like, look, no non-blue deck is probably going to play this, or non-focused blue deck, and it's very specifically in Spells Matters decks, but it's powerful and it's really cool, but it's not busted broken.
Yeah.
It's not an auto include. I want those in the red and white colors, much less so than in blue and green and black.
So what do you think is your sort of favorite card from all the ones that we talked about today?
So I obviously spoke a lot about You Find Some Prisoners. I'm really stoked on that card. I would say my second favorite card would be Zorn. Just a card that gets you more treasures.
Treasure. That's a powerful card that works really well in very specific narrow strategies. Love it.
And it solves a huge problem that mono red and red based decks have, which is just the inability to ramp compared to other colors. And so I'm 100% willing to add in a major treasure sub theme to my Rakdos deck or my mono red deck if I can play cards like Zorn, because that's going to net me a huge advantage. Like my Magda deck with Zorn loves it. Great card.
Did you pick Zorn because I chose as my favorite card You Find Some Prisoners?
Maybe. You know, give a little bit of a
oh my gosh,
variant.
I love playing with my opponent's decks. Like, it's really fun to be like, all right, your deck. And then you anticipate off the, ooh, I found this. It's so nice. But then not having a cute card all the time that it's, you're like, oh, get rid of that artifact. You know, sometimes you have this like fun card that interacts with your opponents, but then you sometimes need it to just do something really relevant. And that's why I love the dual modes on You Find Some Prisoners.
And I love Stolen Strategy, but it costs 5 mana and you have to wait a whole turn cycle before it triggers. You find some prisoners, you get to do it at instant speed, you have a decent amount of time to play it, and you get to choose between 3 cards, not just whatever's on top, which is pretty
nice.
All right, what do you think is the most powerful card out of this set, DJ?
I think that Hobgoblin Bandit Lord is one of the most powerful cards so far.
I think that one fit into the most decks that we could just list off the top of our heads, because it's such a popular strategy.
Just any goblin deck. I mean, when you're talking about one of the most popular tribes, and you're talking about all of the lords that are out there, tons of things to give +1/+1. If this is up there in competition for rank 2 or rank 3, you know, some decks, maybe it's rank 1 of the lords, then that means that it just is powerful. It belongs in a bunch of different decks. And I think people are going to die from this silly little goblin.
Nice. I'm going to go out on a limb here and I'm going to say True Polymorph, the 6 mana instant speed polymorph that can change an artifact or creature into another artifact or creature. I'm going to say that's the most powerful, just because you don't see any of the typical words on there, which is just like non-land permanent or non-token creature. And the fact that it can go artifact to creature or creature to creature or creature to artifact is really exciting to me.
Interesting. Okay. I'm a little bit put off by its power, by its mana cost, and think that like brings the power level down, but I'm excited to see what this thing can do.
Yeah. This is one of those cards, right, that when I get it, I will put it into like 2 or 3 decks that can conceivably play it and just test it out and see how it works. And then if I play a game and it doesn't show up, I would ask myself, was there any point where this card would have made a difference? And if so, is it a big enough difference for me to include it in the deck and keep it in there?
There we go. So we're going to do some testing with this stuff. And so are you out there. Let us know in the comments down below.
That's right. Tell us if we missed anything, any combo synergies. If we were totally wrong about something, I know we had a couple of those complaints last time around. I still stand by my Dragon's Rage Channeler is okay in like, you know, certain decks, but it's not a mainstay, but we probably should have talked about it. It's okay. But yeah, let us know if you have any comments like that in the comment section below. And make sure you head on over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. If you want to pick up any of these cards today, True Polymorph, I mean, look, you find some prisoners, it's an uncommon. Buy enough of those to fit into every single red deck. I'm calling it now, in the same way that Jessica's Will was a card that I think you can put into every single deck that plays red, you can as well for You Find Some Prisoners. That is a card to definitely buy off of cardkingdom.com/commandzone. Maybe you want the foil versions. It's not going to be that expensive because it's an uncommon, but it's definitely going to be one of the chase uncommons, I think, of the set.
Woo!
And Ultra Pro as well. If you want one of these sweet new playmats, you've got the Gelatinous Ooze.
Want to play on top of the Gelatinous Ooze.
It's so cool. Look at them. And you can see all the things oozing and being dissolved in there. It's really cool. Gelatinous Cube, not Ooze. I'm so sorry. And I think I have a dragon. I love all the dragons. Ultra Pro makes the best playmats that match the art from the set. So make sure you pick that stuff up, especially if you're going to go to a local game store and support them during this time when everyone's sort of trying to relaunch into the world. All right. No end step today because we have so many set reviews. But we do have a cleanup step where we give a big thanks to our amazing team here at the Command Zone, which is Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Alfred Estaca, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Arthur Meadowcroft, Sam Waldo, Gaurav Galati, and special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the Living Card animations that start off our show on the channel. You can find them on Twitter at LivingCardsMTG. Okay, DJ, we have 2 more set reviews to go after this. Make sure you all check them out in the upcoming weeks and days. Lots of interesting cards here. And again, the first time Wizards have done anything like this, so I'm pretty stoked to see what else is out there.
Yeah, can't wait to talk more about some cards. We'll see you all really soon.
All right, everyone. Bye-bye.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.